This is Movies for the Blind, episode 28, The Stork Club, part 1.
What fun!
Hi there, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. These days, the media is obsessed with celebrities, following their every move, especially if those moves are awkward, no matter where they go. The beginnings of that obsession can be traced back to a few select nightclubs in Hollywood and New York, which catered to the whims of the famous and the infamous, including newspaper columnists who'd write about their fellow patrons' exploits for the next day's edition. Now, one of those clubs was the Stork Club in New York, attracting everyone and anyone from stage, screens, sports, politics, the underworld, with Walter Winchell to bring the glamour and the gossip to the unwashed masses who could buy a newspaper. The Stork Club got its start as a speakeasy during Prohibition in the U.S., and the same can be said for this movie's star, Betty Hutton. Her performing career began in her family's speakeasy in Michigan, singing with her mother and her sister at the age of 3. She went on to become one of the most popular movie stars of the 1940s because of her booming voice, her comedic chops, and just being a gal that other gals could relate to. Not woman, not girl, not female, not dame, not lady, but gal. That's probably why she's not playing one of the fancy patrons here, but a lowly hat check girl, or gal. From 1945, this is part 1 of 3 of The Stork Club. An M&A Alexander Productions Incorporated release. B.G. De Silva presents Betty Hutton in The Stork Club with Barry Fitzgerald, Don DeFore, Robert Benchley, Bill Goodwin, Iris Adrian, Mikhail Razumi, Mary Young, and introducing Andy Russell. Screenplay by B.G. De Silva and John McGowan. Music direction, Robert Emmett Dolan. Songs, Love Me by Julie Stein and Sammy Kahn. Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief by Hoagy Carmichael and Paul Francis Webster. If I Had a Dozen Hearts by Paul Francis Webster and Harry Revell. I'm a Square in the Social Circle by Jay Livingston and Ray Evans. Director of Photography, Charles Lang Jr. Art Direction, Hans Dreyer and Earl Hedrick. Costumes by Edith Head. Edited by Gladys Carley. Sound recording by Hugo Gransbach and Walter Oberst. Technical Advisor, Leonard McBain. Associate Producer, Harold Wilson. Directed by Hal Walker. Walking from a tree-lined park onto a pier is a short, older gentleman in a suit and boater hat, smoking a pipe.
It's a beautiful day, but a sad one. It was just such a day as this 40 years ago. Long time. Anyhow, we was happier then. Much happier. We were standing here on this very spot, each of the night. We'd be standing here still if she wasn't so stupid.
As he wipes his eyes, his hat is blown off. He chases it along the pier. And when it falls off the end, he loses his balance and does the same. He flails helplessly. Nearby, a sunbathing young woman notices him. Standing up, she dives in. She swims to the man. When she reaches him, he pulls her down in a panic. They pop back up, and she slugs him, knocking him out.
Serves you right, old man.
She pulls him to a dock, where some lobster traps sit. Reaching the ladder, she climbs up to the dock, keeping a hand on the man's suit. With some difficulty, she drags him onto the dock as he starts to come to. She pulls him up to stand on the edge, but when she turns to the traps to give him a place to sit, he falls back in. She dives in again, and three fishermen hurry to the dock.
I wonder what happened to the old guy. Well, here he is.
When the man bobs up, they reach for him and pull him back up on the dock. Searching underwater, the woman comes up and looks around.
Need any help?
Well, I ain't diving for pennies.
We got the old guy.
Oh!
She climbs the ladder to join them.
Turn him over.
They turn him onto his stomach so she can pump water out of him.
Come on, Pop, snap out of him.
His chin's cut.
I closed him. I had to.
Poor old duck, I knew it. Try it.
Try what?
Suicide. Probably down and out.
Oh, you're nuts. Nobody else help us an exit line.
They do when they lose their nerve.
He's coming out of it. Step aside, fellas.
They sit him up.
Okay, Pop, open those roly-poly eyes.
Where's me hat?
That's gratitude. Now he wants his hat.
It's fresher than you.
How do you feel?
Well, I tell you, I'm a man that's allergic to water.
They get him to his feet.
Jump, Bartha, jump, Bartha.
Shaking them off, he turns to the woman.
So you saved me, Louise.
Oh, it's nothing.
Oh, isn't it, though? On second thought, I agree with you.
Oh, Pop, you've got a lot to live for yet.
Have I now? Well, what are you standing there gaping? Yo!
Two of the fishermen leave.
If you're broke, maybe I can help you out.
That's very kind of you. How?
By getting you a job.
What kind of a job?
Kind of fussy, ain't
he? I wasn't talking to you.
He takes her aside.
You're sane, young lady.
If you come and see me, maybe we can dope something out. I gotta hurry now. I'm late for work already.
What's your name?
Judy. Judy Peabody.
Where can I find you?
I work at the Stork Club.
The Stork Club? What's that? A family home?
Well, there are a lot of beautiful babies there. Well, take care of yourself, Pop.
I will, thanks.
As she dives back in, Pop turns to the third man.
Want a lift?
Lift?
In my car.
No, thanks. I've got a car of my own.
The car is a limousine, which soon drives onto an estate and toward a mansion. Stopping at the front door, the chauffeur gets out and opens the rear door for Pop.
You're sneezing, sir.
You don't say.
He steps to the mansion door, held open by a butler.
You're sneezing, sir.
You know, I figured that out for myself.
You're all wet, sir.
I didn't think it showed.
And whatever happened to your chin?
Why, did I lose it?
It's bleeding.
A girl clipped me. She was trying to protect herself.
I see, sir.
No, you don't. I was drowning.
How awful. You better take off those wet clothes, sir. I'll telephone Dr. Marston immediately. Give me your waistcoat, sir.
Later, as Pop sits in bed.
You're all right. Sound as a dollar.
Sound as a dollar? Now, what does that mean?
You'd better stay in bed today, J.B. I'll look in on you in the morning.
Don't bother. Every time you look in on me, it costs me 10 bucks.
Goodbye, J.B.
The butler lets the doctor out of the massive bedroom.
Will there be anything else, sir?
He called Curtis.
He's on his way over here, sir.
Good. Sit down, miss.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Sit down, man.
He does.
I want to ask you something. Miss, did you ever drown?
Why, no, sir.
I mean almost. Well, I just did. As I was going down for the third time, my whole life flashed before me just like a movie.
How was it, sir?
It stank.
I understand, sir.
Oh, you do, huh? Well, no matter. Fisk, I want to ask you something as man to man. If I had drowned, would you have missed me?
Yes, sir, I would.
You're lying. No one would miss me. Not even my wife.
I'm sure Mrs. Bates would be inconsolable, sir.
Nah, she wouldn't shed a tear. Well, maybe one or two, just to be polite.
I'm certain Mrs. Bates loves you very much and always will, sir.
Then why did she up and leave me?
You told her to.
That's no excuse.
Fisk goes to answer the door.
I don't want to see anybody but me lawyer.
Very well, sir. I'll come in, Mr. Curtis.
Hello,
Fisk. Curtis puts down his hat and briefcase.
Hiya, J.B. Got here as soon as I could.
Remind me to give you a measure.
Scotch and soda, please, sir.
Why can't you drink bourbon? Scotch costs money.
Oh, you got enough money to buy all the scotch in town.
Scotch and soda, please.
Bring me one, too.
Very well, sir.
May as well try it before it's all gone.
Well, J.B., what's on your mind?
Curtis sits down.
Tom, I want to do something for a young lady. Something in a financial way.
Financial, huh? Blonde or brunette?
Blonde. Hair of spun gold.
How old is she?
Oh, 21 or 22, I say.
It's your age, I'd say.
Yeah, I know what you say, but don't say it. I fell in the ocean and she saved me life.
So now you're feeling generous, huh?
Very. I want to make her life beautiful.
Well, you can count me out.
Count you out? What do you mean?
Remember, I've seen your bursts of benevolence before.
Ah, but this one is different.
So was Goggin. He was sorry for him. Ordered me to pay him $50 a week for life. And you felt you robbed him of his incentive to work and stopped his allowance.
I was right.
You were right, and I was hooked. I've been paying him out of my own pocket ever since.
Well, if I take Goggins back, will you do what I ask?
I don't want to wind up supporting any blonde.
Well, suppose I give you a signed paper saying I can't stop you. How would that do?
Well, if you can't stop me, it's okay.
Fisk brings the drinks.
Good man.
Anything else, then?
Yeah, lock up the scotch.
Just how happy do you want to make this girl?
Completely happy. It won't cost much. I'm sure her wants are small.
How do you figure that out?
By the bathing suit she was wearing.
Look, why don't you leave it to my judgment? I learned about making girls happy the hard way. What's her name?
Judy Peabody.
Where does she live?
I don't know, but she works at the Stork Club.
Stork Club?
You know the place?
Very well. If you'd lived any kind of life at all, you'd know about it, too.
I know. But this girl, Judy, she still has her life before her. At least I'll have the joy of making her future a bright one.
I think you're on the level this time.
Of course I am. There's just one thing. She's not under any circumstances to know it comes from me. She thinks she saved a poor man.
Pop raises his glass.
To Judy.
So does Curtis.
To Judy, who works at the Stork Club and whose wants are small. I wonder.
Meanwhile, outside the Stork Club, Judy runs up in her street clothes to the doorman.
Hiya, Bill.
Hey, kid, you're late again. Go through the kitchen so Billingsley won't get wise.
I got a better way.
She hurries through the front and right up to the hat check counter.
Well, you finally got here. What's your refuse tonight?
Since when do I have to explain to the help?
She spots a man in a mirror above her and turns to him.
Hello, Mr. Billingsley. I didn't know you were here.
Yes, I happen to be one of the people I haven't barred from the place. Could I have a word with you?
Oh, certainly. I'm all ears.
Come with me, please.
As he steps away...
Where do you go to collect unemployment insurance?
Then she follows Billingsley past the bar of the large, bustling nightclub. And by the first of the tables.
Hello, gentlemen. Good evening, Dave.
As they walk past a room with Latin performers,
what?
A host steps out.
You step into the pantry. One of the waiters, Rocco, was caught walking out with a ham.
Billingsley and Judy follow the host through the Latin room and into a service area where Maitre D' holds a ham.
Give him back the ham.
He gives it to Rocco, who also gets a loaf of bread from Billingsley.
Yeah, you might want to make some sandwiches. Now you can leave and keep going.
As Rocco leaves, Billingsley and Judy walk back into the Latin room and meet another host.
Miss Dorothy L'Amour and Padia, Devil Tree.
I sent her and the other lady a bottle of perfume each with my compliments. And no check.
Yes, sir.
She used to sing with the band here. Can't figure out why she left me.
She's a star in the movies now.
Yes, I heard that.
He leads Judy out of the Latin room and through a small service area to another dining room and another host.
Just received a reservation for Lieutenant Mrs. Robert Taylor.
Oh, that would be Ruby Stevens. Forget what she changed her name to.
You must mean Barbara Stanwyck.
Oh, yes, that's it. A bottle of champagne for Ruby and Bob and no check.
Yes, sir.
Billingsley leads Judy up some stairs, then past his secretary. He lets Judy enter his office first and closes the door. She musters a smile, but he strides past her to his desk.
Tell me, Miss Peabody, what do you think of the Stork Club?
Oh, swell. That was a nice tour we had just now.
I operate this club along my own original idea.
Yes, sir. Particularly when you say no check.
You see, the Stork Club is the mecca for celebrities from all over the world. They come here to eat, see, and be seen. As part of our audience, they attract an audience. Get it?
Oh, now I do.
I want the right people here, in the club and on my staff. And one thing I demand of my staff is punctuality, a fact you continue to ignore.
Mr. Billingsley, I'm sorry. It's like this.
I'm not interested in excuses. You always have excellent ones.
Oh, but the things that happened to me, they're just fantastic. Now, this afternoon...
Now, never mind. You understand, don't you?
I think I do.
Well, sure you do. You're smart. That's why I hired you.
Yeah?
A girl like you is an asset to the Stork Club.
Honest?
Why should I lie to you? Could I run it by myself?
No.
I need plenty of help. Good help. People who think of me once in a while. Like you. I've had my eye on you for a long time, Judy. You don't want to be a hat check girl all your life, do you?
Oh, certainly not.
Well, then use your head. Be on time. I like to see you around. Go along now.
He walks her to the door.
And I'm not fired for being late?
No, but don't let it happen again.
Oh, gee, thanks. It won't.
I want you, above all, to set a good example for the rest of the girls.
Okay, boss.
He lets her out, and he closes his door. Soon after, in her uniform, Judy ducks behind the hat check counter.
Did he tie the can to you? You don't hear it rattling, do you?
Well...
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
They check a patron's hat.
Hey, it's canteen night again tonight. The boss is furnishing the food. Want to go?
Sure. Do you know if he's going?
I don't know, but I bet he does.
Gee, I wish I could get on so he could hear me sing.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
You know that Billingsley's the most generous guy I ever knew. He was wonderful to me.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I hate to say this. I think he's a little bit screwy.
Screwy? Why?
Well, he thinks that Barbara Stanwyck is a girl named Ruby Stevens.
Cracking up.
Definitely.
Later, at the USO canteen, women dance with soldiers. A big one dances especially close with Judy, holding her cheek to cheek.
Say, this ain't fair.
No, but I'll bet it looks that way.
Ah, don't the music get you?
He's had me. My boyfriend's a band leader.
Yeah, what does he play?
He doesn't. He's a Marine in the Pacific.
He stops.
I get you.
And they dance at a more discreet distance.
I was all set to sing with this band, but I guess that's out for the duration.
They sit with Judy's friend.
Hey, by the way, I haven't heard from her in a couple of months. Does that mean anything?
Anything.
Hey, Billingsley just came in.
Where is he?
Over by the door.
They turn to see him standing with one of the hostesses on the bandstand.
Attention, everybody. In this canteen, we entertain ourselves. Any volunteers?
Put me down. That's the boss's face. I want to know how I did.
Good night.
Billingsley leaves just as she gets to the bandstand with a sheaf of sheet music, which she passes out to the band.
Of course you can see I came totally unprepared. How about a little help from my quartet?
We'll be right up.
Okay, fellas, hit it.
There's a doctor living in your town. There's a lawyer and an Indian, too. Neither doctor, lawyer, nor Indian chief could love you any more than I do. There's a barrel of fish in the ocean. There's a lot of little birds in the blue. And neither fish nor fowl, says the wise old owl, could love you any more than I do. No, 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 it couldn't be true. To stick to his practice, tell the lawyer to settle his case, send the engine chief and his Tommy Hawk back to Little Rain in the Face. Cause you know, no, no, it couldn't be true that anyone else could love you like I do.
Her quartet in busboy's aprons join her. They drum on their legs as she twists and dances.
No, 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 it couldn't be true that anyone else could love you like I do.
And confidentially I confess, I sent an oath to the local press that I'll be changing my home address for you. Follow through,
tell the duck to stick to his practice, tell the lawyer to settle his case, send the engine chief and his Tommy Hawk back to Little Rain in the Face.
True.
like I do, like I do, like I do.
She bows happily to the applause, then jumps back down to her table.
These kids are wonderful.
Did you watch his face?
How could I? He took it with him.
Next day, in his bedroom, Pop does up some long johns.
The laundries aren't what they used to be. The comfort all shrunk out of them.
As he puts on old, threadbare clothes, Curtis watches him.
I assured you you'll get the letter at 2 o'clock.
Sure, I'm sending it by special messenger.
Good, good. I got to be there. I got to see your face when she gets it. You see, I'm a nosy kind of a Santa Claus.
You know, it's crazy, J.B., putting on those old rags.
Rags, are they? Here, feel that material. You won't get that quality nowadays.
No, thanks.
Say something, he'll jump out and bite you.
Exactly. Now, look, you want to be anonymous. If you hang around, she's going to smell a rat.
Nonsense. She thinks I'm a poor man. She wants to get me a job.
What do you do if she does?
Never give it a thought. That's a nasty complication. Well, I'll cross that bridge when I cross it.
Wearing worn gray pants, black shirt, and suspenders, he pulls on a dark coat.
How do I look?
You look like a tramp.
I couldn't think it possible.
Uh-huh. Look at the head start you got.
Nothing you can say can annoy me today. Come on, drive into town.
I wouldn't walk to the corner, will you?
Curtis leaves as Pop gets a beaten-up hat. Later, on a city sidewalk...
Excuse me. I wonder, would you be kind enough
to... Here you are. And don't tell me you're going to spend it on food.
He leaves him with a coin.
How dare you? I ought to...
He almost throws the coin after him, but looks at it and puts it in his coat pocket. Soon after, he finds the store club.
There it is. Sure enough.
Wandering behind Bill the doorman, he heads inside. He takes off his hat and looks around the lobby, then smiles when he spots the hat check counter and approaches it.
Check your hat.
Judy looks at him.
Ha!
How are you, Judy?
How have you been, anyway?
I've been managing.
Anyhow, you're still alive.
Is he?
Oh, Gwen, this is Pop. I pulled him out of the ocean.
Why?
Young lady, what kind of a question is that? Have you no feeling for your fellow man?
Not a thread.
Oh, don't pay any attention to her, Pop. Listen, you stick around. I'm going to see what I can do about getting you a job.
No hurry, no hurry at all. It's plenty of time.
Don't want to work, huh?
I'm beginning not to like you. Don't encourage it.
Look, Pop, you want to make something out of yourself, don't you?
He already has. Look at him.
You do want to work, don't you?
Well, not if I can possibly escape it. I'm not easy placed. I have limitations.
What'll I do with him?
Throw him back in the ocean.
Oh, I can't do that.
Oh, thanks.
But I am going to get him a job.
She steps out from behind the counter and walks off.
Hey, Pop. Hula, take a powder.
I wonder what your mother was like.
Judy approaches a maitre d'.
Mr. Coretti, how are you fixed for help?
Help? Do you mean there's somebody who wants to work?
Well, I ain't thinking you'd be talked into it.
Judy, for a good wage that I would give both of my right eyes.
Oh, he's more the busboy type.
Then I'll give only one.
Well.
Turning toward the lobby, she gets Pop's attention and waves him over. He steps past the velvet rope on his way to her and Coretti.
This is Pop. Mr. Coretti, Pop.
Mr. Coretti, is it?
Come with me.
Coretti steps away.
Good luck, Pop.
As he reluctantly follows Coretti, Judy goes back to the hat check counter.
What happened?
Coretti snapped him up like that.
I bet he hasn't worked since Sing Sing.
Just outside the kitchen.
Now remember what I said. Don't pile too many dishes on one tray. Be courteous to the waiters.
To the waiters?
Yes. We can get all the customers we want on your way.
In his new store club uniform, Pop is nudged by Coretti through a door to the dining area. A waiter leads him to a table full of diners.
Clear out these dishes, boy.
The waiter leaves him. Tossing his towel on a tray, Pop pushes between two diners and starts clearing dishes, which he drops onto the tray. He nudges another woman to pick up her dishes and cups. Then he turns to a man still eating and picks up his things.
I'm not finished with this yet, boy.
You are, as far as I'm concerned.
Tugging them from his hands, Pop drops them on the tray, which he lifts high as he barges between the tables. A waiter carries an order out through the doors, but Pop blocks him and makes him maneuver around to continue. Pop backs into the kitchen.
Hey, Bart, right over here.
He throws the whole thing at the dishwasher's feet. Wiping his hands, he turns to Coretti and starts taking off the uniform. Soon after, in his old clothes, he returns to the hat check counter.
Well, Pop, when do you start?
I've already finished.
What?
Short hours. It's the union I belong to.
Now, Pop, come clean.
I'm sorry, and I hope you'll think nonetheless of me for being the kind of man I am. It's not that I'm not grateful to you, because I am.
That's okay, Pop. I'll think of something else.
Oh, no, you won't.
You go over there and sit down. I'll be off in a few minutes, and we'll talk about it.
Well, we can talk about it, I guess.
He steps away.
Why don't you give him a couple of bucks and let him go? No, I like him. I think I'll adopt him.
Now, Judy, you don't know anything about his parents.
A courier approaches.
Where can I find Miss Judy Peabody?
I'm Judy Peabody.
Pop goes back to the counter as Judy looks at the envelope she's been given. She and Gwen read the letter inside. My dear Miss Peabody, you have a benefactor who insists upon remaining anonymous. It is my pleasure to inform you that accounts have been opened in your name at the following establishments. National Security Bank, York Towers Apartments and Hotel, Locks Fifth Avenue. You have been most accommodating, my client assures me, and this is your reward. Signed, T.P. Curtis.
Oh, Gwen, this is a gag.
Not to me it isn't. What have you been up to?
Nothing. Why?
That line, you have been most accommodating.
That's a lie.
I wouldn't take that too seriously. Somebody thinks very highly of you.
I'll say they do. Nothing like that ever happens to me.
Do you think it could be on the level?
It's a cinch to find out.
That's right. Locks Fifth Avenue's the biggest store in New York. They sell everything from a baseball bat to a diamond lavalier.
Who needs a diamond lavalier? The very book.
If that letter means what I think it does, you'll need a baseball bat.
I'll try it out on Pop.
On me?
We'll take you to the men's department and get you outfitted from head to foot. If it works, we'll buy out the joint.
Pop looks away, concerned. Later, at Locks, a man fits him in a new suit and boater hat.
There, a complete metamorphosis.
Well, thank you to keep a civil tongue in your head.
We'll take two more, a blue and a gray. Oh, gee, Pop, you look wonderful. I'm proud of you.
I wish I could share your joy.
Is this cash or a charge, miss?
Charge.
Thank you. Mr. Hanson! Mr. Hanson!
Judy nudges Gwen.
But that's a house detective.
Your name, please?
Judy Peabody.
Your address?
The store club.
You live there? What fun! Shall we send this, Miss Peabody?
No, we'll take him with us.
Hanson, credit manager. Miss Peabody? Why, of course, Miss Peabody. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Locks.
I'm glad to meet you, too.
She shakes his hand.
We've been expecting you.
Then everything's all right?
Perfectly in order.
She sighs with relief and looks around.
Where are the mink coats?
Pop grimaces. Soon after, she and Gwen caress a black mink coat.
Genuine Labrador mink, Miss Peabody. Minks? Most unhealthy little animals.
How much is it?
$6,000. Feel it, sir. I can feel it from here.
Oh, it's beautiful. And the price is right.
But, Judy, wouldn't it be better if you first looked at some nice cloth coats?
Oh, Pop, you have no idea what mink means to a woman. I'll take two.
Two?
My coming-out present for you.
Oh, Judy, I couldn't think of it.
What do you mean? You've been thinking of it for years. We'll wear them.
Today? In all this heat?
Wouldn't you?
Yes, Miss Peabody.
The saleswoman walks off. Nearby.
Miss Peabody's the young lady in white.
But, Judy, it's August and one of the hottest days in the year.
So what?
You'll melt in a fur coat.
Yeah, but I look awful good doing it.
Miss Peabody?
Yes?
I'm Higgins, your chauffeur.
Yeah?
Your car's at the north entrance.
My car?
Yes, miss.
She gulps.
Well, why weren't you at the store club to pick me up?
Sorry, miss, but I was instructed to move your things to the York Tower.
Oh, well, see that it doesn't happen again.
I can stand it no longer.
Pop walks off.
You may go, Hawkins.
Higgins, miss.
Higgins, Schmiggins. You may go anyway.
Nodding, confused, Higgins obeys. Meanwhile, Pop makes a phone call.
Curtis, what are you trying to do to me?
That girl is here buying fur coats in bunches like bananas.
Well, you wanted to make her happy, didn't you?
Sure, I wanted to make her happy, but not hysterical. Cars, chauffeurs, your towers. The girl will break me.
Well, J.B., if she does, you can always come and stay with me.
Chuckling, Curtis hangs up.
I don't want to stay with...
Noticing he hung up, Pop is the same, exasperated.
I keep them out of the sun as much as possible.
We'll get a couple of parasols.
That's a good idea.
They walk off in their coats.
Call again, Miss Peabody.
We will if we're in town.
They meet Pop.
Where have you been?
Getting me second wind.
And now for the dresses.
A little later, models walk through the store's elegant showroom in designer dresses for day and for evening. On a settee, Judy and Gwen admire them, still wearing their mink coats. Judy tugs at her collar as the fashion show continues. Gwen turns to Judy.
To be a better word for it than that.
A model turns down the hood on her floor-length jacket, which she opens to reveal a bandeau top and long black skirt with high side slit. Gwen and Judy squirm from the heat.
Shall we take them off? I'll die first.
Forcing a smile, she slowly wipes sweat from under her nose. A sophisticated black dress and turban outfit parades past, followed by a white gown with black stole, as the customers suffer nobly.
Judy, for Pete's sake, buy something and let's get out of here.
All right. Miss?
Yes, Miss Peabody?
I don't know. They're all so beautiful, but...
Pop approaches.
I'll take that one, and that one, and that one, and that one.
I'll take that one, and that one, and that one, and that one. Why don't you take them all?
All right, Pop. I'll take them all.
Ah, the trouble has just begun for Pop, and soon for Judy, because that boyfriend, that Marine in the Pacific, is on his way home. Think he'll understand. You're the Sparks Fly in part 2 of 3 of The Stork Club, next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check out the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.